listening to Shop Talk with your host, Kevin Tates. Brought to you by Eastwood Tools. Everything you need to do the job right.
Hey guys, you're listening to Shop Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Tates, and we are brought to you by the Eastwood Company. Do the job right with Eastwood. Well, if you've been to a Good Guys Autocross sometime within the last year, you've probably heard this guy kind of giving people a hard time on the autocross course, but with a little bit of an educated spin. We've got Tim Strange on the phone, and if anybody can give an opinion on a hot rod and how it runs and how it looks, it's Tim Strange. He's kind of been around the block. Tim, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad. It's hot here in Tennessee. Other than that, doing pretty good. Things going your way?
Yep, doing good. Yep, hot in my shop, too. Of course, you know, our shops aren't really that far away from each other.
I know. Here we are talking on the phone. But so tell me about Good Guys a little bit. You call the autocrosses, and I've seen you guys with your vendor tent set up for the Strange Motion shop, and Carrie's awesome little Corvette was sitting out front. Tell me about you and Good Guys. What's the relationship there?
Well, last year they had a guy that was doing most of the events, and he decided he didn't want to travel to all of them, and they asked me if I wanted to jump in and try a couple of the events that he couldn't be at. So I was like, sure, I think I can probably talk about cars on a microphone. Yeah, I can talk about cars all day long. And so they flew me to a couple of the smaller ones in Colorado and Massachusetts to get my feet wet, and then it kind of blossomed onto there, and I was supposed to do 5 events for them, and they booked me for a couple of the other ones, and actually signed me on for their season-ending autocrosser of the year. Then over the winter, they said, hey, give me a schedule of pick which ones you'd like to do. Had a good response from you, and so I'm actually doing 10 for them this year. I've done 8 already, and I got 2 more yet to do this year, Texas, and their big autocross of the year. Autocrosser of the year shootout in Scottsdale the week after the SEMA show, and I think they're going to have me and the other guy that does a lot of the announcing actually both double up and do the weekend together.
Cool. Well, I got to tell you, man, you do a really good job of it. It seems like you're having fun doing it.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. It's cool. You know, I get a little paycheck, and, you know, a lot of these events, yeah, it's events that maybe I've been to before, and I would still go and maybe have a vendor booth or something, but we only seem to have a vendor booth now at Nashville because that's like our local event, you know, where our shop's not too far away, and some of the other ones we still take a car, carry. We know we don't carry a Corvair that we debuted at SEMA, so we'll take it, maybe stick it in a vendor booth or a sponsor booth, and we go and work the autocross. So it's kind of fun, and, you know, I get to go to events that I haven't been to before, like the Massachusetts and then the new one in Florida. And, you know, I'd never been to the Texas events before they had me come down, so it's pretty neat to get to go to those events and, you know, still talk to people and still be seen and do a little networking, and yeah, make fun of some of my friends on a microphone when they happen to get lost like you did, and get a little paycheck. So it's actually pretty fun.
Rub it in.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I did get lost, but, you know, I don't feel so bad because I came back from being – I lost my way completely. It was a very complex course, and it was right up at a minute that the big boys were pulling times down, 66, 67 seconds. And when Brian Finch told me he got lost the first time around, it made me feel just a little bit better about me getting lost.
Yeah, you know, I tried to
I didn't knock any cones over.
Yeah, and you were totally lost and off course and still didn't knock any cones off, so I guess that's pretty impressive driving. But
I don't know if it is, and maybe I drive like my grandmother. I don't know, one of the two.
Yeah, but it is, especially earlier in the day, before the rubber marks get down and stuff, it actually, a couple of the courses like Nashville, they're a little bigger, and you actually have to dip back into the course once, and you kind of got to pay attention a little bit. It is a little bit easy to get lost. Some of the bigger events, like last weekend, we was at Columbus, and we ran just about 1,000 laps in 2.5 days, and the course was like,
wow,
you know, the 27 second was the fast one, and averaged probably 35 seconds for most of the other people. So that big of event, we won, couldn't have enough space on the fairgrounds to have a really big course, but we also wanted to push through a bunch of laps so a lot of people can get their feet wet in this autocross type of thing. And Good Guy sets it up so it's, like the Columbus one is actually 1 lap instead of like Nashville was basically 2 laps. You know, and they run chalk lines and cones all the way around the course. So it's easier for people to try to figure out the course because a lot of like the SCCAs, they run it more like downhill skiing where there's not chalk marks and paths all the way around where they just,
yeah, it's just cones
tip over where you have to go around
right?
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's way easy to get lost, I think. So.
Yeah, big time, big time. But Isn't it really cool to see the trend in the hot rodding and custom car world to where there's an event like a Good Guys event, and people are lined up six rows deep to take these beautiful custom cars, whether they're in the pro class or whether they're in a daily driver or street driver class, and they're just willing to flog the hell out of these cars. I love it, man. I love the fact that people are enjoying their custom cars. What do you think about that? You've been building cars a long time.
Yeah, and I think it's awesome. You know, just Good Guys themselves are one of the first big national events to allow the newer cars to come in, like street rod shows where all 48 and older than Good Guys come along and let the newer cars in. Well, that kind of brought in more, you know, hey, I'm going to the car show with my dad. We're each taking our cars type of thing. Well, that brings out more of that with the autocross. We've got certain families that they mostly could care less what their standings are in their category that they're racing in of the four or five classes we got. They're just out there paddling. Well, let my dad run that last lap. Or, you know, did I better my time? You know, it's really cool. My wife actually helps run some of the events and hands out tickets and stuff, so she gets their reaction right from the start. But sometimes she's also got to give them the bad news that you knocked over a few cones, which adds a second per cone. But, yeah, it's really cool to see the families come out. And, you know, yeah, there is a pro class. There's a lot of high-dollar iron. But, you know, there's street machine class, truck, and hot rod for the 54 and older cars. So it's really neat to see the cross of generations out there. Just a quick example, there was a guy that I think he's 72 that shows up at the Texas events in this traditional fat fender, like 48 Ford, you know, caps and duty rings on it, you know, just a traditional street rod.
Yeah.
He come out there and he told my wife, he says, man, I've been going to rod runs and stuff for 30 years. Last year I got out here and slid this thing around the autocross. One, I've never had as much fun in my life, and I'm not going to sit behind my car in my lawn chair anymore. And two, I can officially drive my car like my wife can't. She can't say that I'm not allowed to. He's on the race course out there having fun. You know, that's a 72-year-old guy out there just having a blast on the autocross. That's what it's all about.
You're absolutely right, man. That's cool. Cool story. Well, let's talk about Strange Motion, and let's talk about Tim Strange. People call you a car builder, designer, a hot rod builder. What do you prefer to be called? What do you kind of hang your hat on? What do you consider yourself?
I just call myself a car builder. You know, I started out young, you know, doing body work in the garage with my dad. When I turned 16, I started doing body work at a local body shop, but we also did a lot of Corvette restorations and hot rod Corvettes, but you know, I do chassis, I do a lot of metal fab, you know, I got all the planish and hammers and English wheels and bead rollers and slip rolls and all that stuff in my shop, and I like to do it all because I'd probably get bored if I was just doing body or just doing chassis or metal fab or whatever, and, you know, I've always kind of done the turnkey stuff, even though, you know, it's still cool to, you know, just build a firewall or roll cage or some tubs or hang some quarters on for somebody, but I like doing it all so then I don't get bored. Maybe I'm a jack of all trades, master of none, but when you're doing the whole car, you kind of have a little bit more control of it. It doesn't matter if you've got artwork or whatever, if you're building a high-end car, and you know, I've got a lot of buddies in the hot rods world and run shops and stuff that you go to dinner with when you're at these events, and, you know, oh, you know, this guy did the metal work, and, you know, then it came to me for body work. Well, we had to redo half his metal work or whatever. It's just like
right. Everybody,
there's a lot of good guys, but every shop has a slightly different vision of what that car is supposed to be. And, you know, sometimes it costs the customer more if you jump shops around. And I think we've always kind of liked sticking to it and doing the whole thing. Even my wife did upholstery full time for 7 years, and she's kind of picking and choosing a few right now. She did her car. And it's just easier, you know, you can mock up and do all the interior fab while the car's in primer, and it's just a lot easier and a lot less stressful than, you know, here you've
well,
got
yeah, she doesn't have to worry about she doesn't have to worry about leaning over painted panels or anything like that, or if God forbid something happens, then it's in the right stage to be able to correct it and move on rather than, I'm sure it takes about another 30% longer if you're tap dancing and being careful around fresh paint, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of shops that are just upholstery shops, but either the newbie to the hot rod world or somebody that's never been around the upholstery, to do a custom hot rod interior, I mean, people just don't actually kind of realize the fab work that goes into it, whether you're building the panels out of aluminum or wood or, you know, you're using Bondo work or whatever underneath the leather. I mean, there's a lot of fab work. It's not just sewing and wrapping and stapling and shooting some glue on stuff.
No, no. Well, and even if it was that simple, that stuff gets complicated after a while. So there's a true art form to it. I mean, your wife, Carrie Strange, I've seen some of the work that she's done before you and I even knew each other, just in magazines, and she does beautiful work. And guys like Ronnie Mangus and there's several of the big heavy hitters out there that are just – they're artists. And it's like every facet of what we do, there's art involved in it. So I wanted to ask you, too, you grew up kind of like I grew up looking at cars and custom cars in magazines. And give me just a short answer if you want, or go long if you want. But how have things changed since you started building cars for customers till now?
Well, it's changed a few times. Because, you know, kind of when I started, I'm still, sometimes I feel young still for the industry, but my body's telling me, and my wife every day, how old I am getting. you know, when you were younger, there was not a million car magazines out there. And then there for a while, some of you guys don't know out there listening to this, the magazine industry, right after the first year, they killed off a few of the titles, and then they... What, about a month and a half ago, they dropped another 15 of some of these titles that's been around since,
since the 60s, you know. 50s, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and so it is changing, but in their defense, too, the market was kind of flooded. You know, they had, what was it, classics and custom trucks. Well, the same people have classic trucks. It's kind of the same magazine. You know, they were a little thin. Well, now they can roll it all into one. I was surprised, they dropped Popular Hot Rodding, rolled that up in the Car Craft. I thought that was a good, strong magazine. Hate to see Rod and Custom leave, but it was getting pretty thin with, just like TV shows. The ads are what pays the bills. And
Absolutely,
if they can't sell ads, that's, they don't make their living off of subscriptions and people buying it off the stands. Yeah, that helps tremendously, but the ad sales is where the money is.
Yeah.
And then with everything coming online, I still like to have a magazine in my hand. So, one, you can take it with you. I put it in my backpack when I fly to an event, so I read the latest magazine on the airplane. Or you take it into the bathroom with you. I don't like to take my laptop into the bathroom with me. I still like print. I think we're going to see a change in the order. Well, someday all the print's going to be gone, and it'll all be computers and online. I hope it doesn't come sooner than what it's starting to look like, because I still like a printed magazine. I've been in touch with some of the magazines, the high-ups and stuff, and actually we're getting ready to start writing some more. Well, I used to do this years ago, write some how-to stories, take the pictures and, put it all together and send it in, and now... we're going to start doing that for a couple more of the magazines right now, it seems like, too.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I've been doing that on and off for a while. I really enjoy that. I don't know. To me, it's kind of storytelling, and it's I like the aspect of showing people how to do stuff. You know that about me anyways. But for me, doing that for magazine stories, I think it's kind of fun. And it keeps you in touch with other things. It's challenging, too, because it's not as easy as people would think. You gotta know photography, and you got to know how to present it, and you got to know how to tell a story, put it in a way to where the magazine likes it and people understand it and get something from it. So, cool. Yeah.
That sounds good. Good Guys has me do that, too. When I'm announcing an event, I actually write the story for the Good Guys Gazette and get that print in there, too. And, that's another thing that's changed for the good with technology. I would love to be face-to-face with my old high school English teacher and tell her that I'm actually getting paid to write stories. She would be like, no, really? You want to go back and look at your grades? But, we didn't have spell check on computers back then.
I know it. That's funny as heck. So, in your opinion, I'm just going to summarize for you. So things have kind of changed for the better, maybe. And I'm with you on it makes me sad that print is possibly going away. I still hang on to it. I can't roll up my laptop and put it in my back pocket. There's great things about the internet. There's horrible things about the internet. But I always knew, that I could go and geek out of the grocery store or the bookstore and pick out magazines, and then I don't know. To me, I've got boxes of them. I've got my dad's old magazines. So I hope it doesn't go away. But you can't change technology, and it's getting faster and faster in the way that it changes too, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm one of them too. I've never thrown away a magazine that I've had. When we moved to Tennessee, them plastic storage tubs that you get at the stores, I moved 65 of those Folks magazines.
I thought I was bad, man.
Yeah.
Oh, me. Speaking of magazines, Tim, now you and I have had this conversation in the past, and I'm aware of it, but people listening to Shop Talk right now, how many magazines has Strange Motion and cars built or touched by Tim Strange been a part of?
The last, we kind of keep a running order. My wife's got this computer thing, and we just plug it in, and we haven't updated it for a while, but we do marketing reports, and, you know, or we're dealing with a new sponsor for the shop or whatever. It's nice to have that. And we've been counting magazines that our cars have been in, ad campaigns, stories, or cartoons, or whatever. It's over 275 magazines around the world we've been in right now.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. And congratulations for that, man. That's I know what a thrill it was for me to have my Mustang Jaded in popular hot rodding while it was still on the newsstand. So I don't imagine that ever gets old. But the reason I wanted to ask you is that, you know, we get people emailing us in. One of the most popular Shop Talk shows that we did was with Robert McGaffin, and it was kind of on the subject of how do people get their cars in magazines. So I'm going to pose that question to you. What advice would you give to somebody to get their car, get the interest of a magazine editor at a car show, and possibly get it into print?
Well, it's hard because also, actually, me and I know Robert McGaffin, actually, we had a conversation about that. You know, and I've known some of these guys that were magazine editors of some of these magazines that just got dropped, that they would go to the car shows without any signage on their body of the magazine that they were shooting for because they get hit up so much time.
Right, right.
I mean, you can't tell, it's hard to tell a guy to his face when he drags you over to look at his car that looks like everybody else's. Hey, man, I want to get my car in the magazine. And it's like, you know, there's a million cars that look the same out there. And
right.
I think what helped us, I mean, I was lucky from, I think I was 20 years old when I got my first magazine shoot. I went to the Street Machine Nationals, but it was also, there was far less national events back in the day than when I used to start going to stuff over 20 years ago. So, you know, more of the magazine guys would show up at the same event. I mean, I used to go to the Street Machine Nationals. There used to be 15 or 20 photographers from all over the world that would come to that event. You know, that's when Pro Street was big and Street Machine stuff, and, you know, that was before, you know, the Good Guy shows. Yeah, they were around, but they really weren't as huge as, you know, now them and the NSRA are the big ones now. And I just got lucky. I had a car that was a little bit different. And my first time I ever got a magazine shoot, we had four magazine photo shoots in the same weekend from people from all over the world. I mean, so then from then all out, they're like, hey, man, yeah, we really like your stuff, you know. You got to treat these people with a little respect. If you got the best car in the grounds and you're a jerk, hey, what? They maybe not shoot your car. They don't care how nice that car is. So relationships and being professional goes a long, long way.
Yeah.
Stay in touch with the people, and if they say, hey, here's my card, keep us in touch of what you're doing. As soon as you start a new car, you got artwork for that new car, you might want to send it to them, and they might even help you with, you know, promoting the car and run. You know, we've had really luck with get a professional artwork done and send it into the magazines, and they say, hey, here's what Strange Motion's next project, you know, due date is this event next year or whatever, and here's the companies that are already involved in it. We've done that a lot of times, and that really helps out, you know, not only helping your sponsors and promoting yourself, but just get people antsy and the car gets scheduled to get shot when it's all done.
Yeah, yeah. So I think you touched on something to where the community that we're in is full of really nice people. And to me, it's also full of people that have a very short threshold for bullcrap. And you know, we gravitate towards the people that are easy to deal with, it seems like. And so, you know, having a good attitude about it, I think, is probably the best advice that you could give.
Yeah, if you get too cocky about stuff or think you're the best guy in the world, it's just like a race car. Yeah, you might be the fastest guy in your county, but I guarantee you, if somebody's got more money and a better chassis in the next county, that's probably going to whoop your butt. You know, that's the same thing. You know, there's a lot of really good car builders out there, and some of them are awesome, and some of them are pretty conceited. And, you know, I talk to a lot of people around the country, and, you know, same with companies. I kind of old school Midwest farmer mentality. If I deal with a company and they treat me bad, I don't care how good their product is, I'm probably not going to buy their product ever again. You know, I kind of deal with people who I like, and you know, the industry, it's a big industry, but it's smaller than you think, and you like to be around people that you enjoy being around, and that's why I do business with the people that I do business with.
Yep. Yeah. Well, you talked about talented people in this industry, and you on Search and Restore, you brought in some amazing people that I learned tons from. It was a privilege standing beside some of these cats, Brad Starks and Voodoo Larry and some of the people that you brought in as guests on Search and Restore. And I say you because it was you that was doing the cold calls and getting people involved in the projects. That was a great experience for me, and I know that that you have a very strong opinion, as do I, about automotive television. And you know, you and I both, we've kind of been through the ringer with that. And what do you think about what's going on with automotive TV right now?
Well, I guess I'll backtrack there. You mentioned a little bit about the Search and Restore show, how people thought that show worked and how it actually worked, that those volunteers never got paid or any travel or nothing. So that's why I used all my buddies that, one, I knew were badasses in their field and would work, and we could get along and no drama, because I don't put up with drama. And, you know, there was times that there was 10 guys sleeping on my living room floor to get those jobs done. That show was something I really enjoyed being part of. That's a show that I'll always, you know, a positive time that we really helped a lot of people's lives. And now to get on your question about all the other TV, there isn't enough of those type of TV shows that they help people. They all want to fight and bicker and everything. So pretty much I want to say the whole 90% of the TV industry world right now just totally sucks. You know, after doing TV, and you're probably the same way, you look at it in a different way. You look at the way that they talk on TV. You look at their camera angles. You look at their lighting. I mean, it kind of ruined me for some points, but I had a talk this weekend with some friends that were down this weekend, and, oh, he loves this TV show. I was like, dude, really? I should kick you out of my house. That is the disgrace to the industry, and it's putting out so much false stuff. I mean, the Power Block, I don't really – it's a weekend how-to, you know – I don't really consider that. You know, those are good shows. There's no drama. That whole production company, they don't like the fake drama. There might be drama behind the cameras, but they don't put it on TV.
Right.
And that's, you know, they've been a respectful TV programming for years and years, and they do it. You know, they get a little how-to and, you know, take some ad money, and, you know, that's just how it kind of works. You know, the shows that I'm saying that are these primetime shows. You know, I put a pitch in front of one of these big primetime networks. Oh, they loved it, but they wanted to add this, and we need somebody fighting, and you got to have a car done every week. And I was like, well, you guys are what's part of the reason, but the problem with the industry right now, one, you're making us all look like a bunch of idiots. We're not a bunch of alcoholic car flippers that we half-ass a car and paint the outside of the car and not even the bottom of the hood, and then we crack open a beer and sell it for $10,000 profit. You know, that's not, I mean, the bad thing is there's more people in the world that watch soap operas than are real car people that will understand a car TV show. You know, it's sad that that's the way it is, but it is, you know. It's hard for me to imagine that because my family, my relatives, most everybody's into cars or has had cars or wants a car. You know, for me to realize that somebody don't even know how to change their own oil or, you know, never even had a Chevelle back in high school or whatever like that, it's hard for me to grasp. But, you know, that's the way the world is. There's more people that are watch a father and son screaming and throwing tools around the shop than it is somebody that say, hey, this is how you TIG weld or run an English wheel and shape this hammer or chop a top, you know?
Yeah. You know, what bugs me about it is that, it like you said, it spins a negative image of what you do at Strange Motion, building cars, designing cars. I mean, there's a real skill to that, and there's an honor in it. There's a legacy. You know, hot rods, let's face it, it's like baseball. It's kind of timeless, and these are markers in time. The styles and trends, you can look back and see an 80s car, a 60s car, a 70s car, and you can, you know, and there's integrity in that. And what bugs me about what a lot of is going on in TV today is the fact that it's not even real drama. It's not even real guys that are pissed at each other and throwing rocks at each other. Some producer goes in there and says, okay, like you said, we want these four elements in a show, and you know, we'll give you 10 episodes. It's not even close to being reality, you know. And I don't know, man. It's the same boring format, and I'm tired of it.
I've officially turned down over 7 TV offers in the last year and a half.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
everybody, you know, you gotta have to be on TV. Well, I did TV, good or bad, I don't really know yet. Would I do TV again? Yeah, if it's the right thing. But I'm not going to be on TV just to be on TV. I think there's too many people out there that do that. You know, there are a couple decent shows out there that I can tolerate, but there's more shows that I don't. And just for instance, there's a show that I tried to watch 5 minutes of one time that it was somebody did well on a home improvement show on one of the smaller networks, so they hired him as an actor and tried to do fake automotive TV. There's a show on TV that I don't think anybody on there is a real car person. They're just paid to be a personality and mess around in a shop. And, yeah. You know, it's disturbing to me. And, I've been a part of this industry full-time for my living, not part-time, for 21 years. When I did the show for 2 years, that was a part-time thing that I filmed 16 weeks of the year and still ran my shop. I'm a SEMA judge. You know, I judge Best New Street Rod, Best Engineered Product at the SEMA show. I've volunteered on countless college advisory boards that they bring in car builders and you help with the curriculum and all that stuff. You know, I've worked hard. I've always wanted to be part of this industry, and I still work hard to make all of us car guys look good and make the industry grow. I don't want to do a TV show that we're cobbling something up and bondoing something stupid and flipping it and car flippers are fine. I don't have a problem with people doing something and making money, but do the car properly. If you're not going to do it properly, at least educate the cameraman and say, hey, maybe you shouldn't, after we painted this car black, don't show the bottom of the hood is still blue. I've seen that on more than one TV show. It's like, man, a little bit of a car person sitting in some editing time would go a long way to save some of these shows.
Oh, I agree. Wow. Well, I mean, it was fun working with you on Search and Restore. I learned a lot from you, and especially, like I said, from some of the people that you had come in. And I don't know. It was a good experience for me. It was a bunch of hard work. As you know, the TV, I don't know. That was more than TV, though. But, you know, now that that's behind you, you're working with good guys. What's going on at the Strange Motion shop now?
Well, we got a cool old shop that was an old Pontiac dealership built in 1920. I like old buildings and architecture like I do old cars. And we got this south, you know, middle Tennessee outside of Nashville just a little bit. Close enough to Nashville to go up and be a part of stuff in Nashville, but then get out of in the small town a little bit. Fixing it up, doing a lot of work on it. And we post pictures in our shop on our Strange Motion Rod and Custom Facebook page quite a bit. But one bad thing about TV that people don't really tell you is in my new shop, you can't find the address. There's not a sign on the building, and I pull my vehicle in every day and lock the door. Uh-huh. And I know you're exactly the same way. Yep. Even today, I had a one of our sponsors and people that help us in the shop come by, and he's like, when are you going to be there? And I said, well, I'll be here after lunch. I'm at lunch right now. And then he says, well, I'm at your shop. It don't look like nobody's there. And I says, well, let me in. I'll let you in. You know, I leave the door locked even when I knew he was coming. Text me when you're there. You know, I don't have a problem with people coming by, but it's by appointment only. So it's kind of for a small shop, we stay busy, but we do a lot of traveling, so we just kind of, I don't even take deliveries at my shop. My deliveries are all someplace else. So.
Right. Well, I'm not going to say the TV bug bit you, but maybe it. I like the stuff that you guys are doing with the Strange Motion TV. Tell me about the YouTube channel.
Well, we started. You know, there's things that when you watch TV and being part of the production of that, that's one good thing. I was very luckily to be able to work with the producer and the main editor was the producer of Search and Restore, that he would always, hey, come into the office, let's look at this. Does this look right? I mean, he was a TV guy in his defense. You know, he had an old car, but he wasn't, you know, a born and bred all his whole life hot rod guy, so he would miss some stuff. Well, when I was there, you know, I could say, oh, man, you clipped that off. You need 10 seconds here and 5 seconds here at the end, and that really explains what we just did. And he, you know, listened to me and do as good as he could and plugged it in.
Yeah, that's just a good producer.
Yeah, you know, that it was pretty cool that I could also be a part of it. You know, I'm no editor and producer, but, you know, I was a car guy. I built the car and got it done on the deadlines and organized all the people and all that stuff. But there's so many things. I was like, man, can you show this? He's like, man, we just can't. There's too many sponsors to plug. There's too many this. We can't drag that out too much. So if you do something on YouTube, there's no time restraints, there's no commercial breaks, there's no nothing like that that you have to do when you're doing TV. And that's another thing that a lot of people that never done TV, they don't quite get. Well, if you're doing a YouTube channel, which ours is called The Strange Motion Way, we've only got, you know, 8 or 9 maybe videos, and we've been traveling a lot here the last couple months. We got some new ones we got to get filmed and up. We're doing it really low-key, low-dollar. Most of the videos up there right now are filmed on my wife's iPhone. We bought a GoPro, and we're looking at some other stuff, but really low-dollar. Barely, you know, just the fluorescent light in the background, no professional equipment like you got in your studio. but just trying to get, like, we follow through all the steps this week, like one episode, okay, this is why we're going to fix this cap corner, and this is why it was repaired wrong. And then the next one, you know, here we are, we're cutting it out and found this, and we're starting to make a patch. Okay, here's the next one, we're making the patch, we're welding it in, we're grinding it down. Well, each one of those, even with narrowing them down and kind of hurrying through it for so people don't get bored, they're all around 10 minutes. Well, you've already filled up a half hour and more of TV show at that point, and not even got a cap corner done yet. So you can't really show all the techie stuff on a TV show. So, but YouTube, there's no time restraints. So that's kind of what we're doing. You know, yeah, we work with some of our companies that help us out and plug their stuff, but we're just doing right now simple tech, like the cab corner. Instead of TIG welding it, we MIG'd it and ground the MIG down. You know, MIG welders are cheaper and easier for people to operate, so we use that and try not to use a lot of my high-dollar equipment, but we're going to get on as we get in more and more. We'll show some, you know, here's the planish and hammer, here's, you know, our specialized sheet metal equipment that we do have. This is, you know, why it costs a lot to have a car built, because you're not just paying a labor rate, you're paying for their skill labor.
Exactly.
And, you know, and their equipment and all that stuff that the backyard guy doesn't have that might charge you $12 an hour, and why does this other thing cost you, you know, $65 or $100 an hour or whatever? It's because you're paying for their skill and what they've learned through the years. So that's kind of what we're doing with that. Yeah, there's some fun stuff on there, like a lot of people think we're a big shop with a lot of employees, and it's pretty much just me and my wife. So we've got a Meet the Staff video on the YouTube channel that's got nine employees, and it's me and my wife in different outfits and different accents and stuff, and having a little fun with that. So,
we
try to mix it up. On YouTube, you can be a little bit more honest than you can on TV, and I mean, it's not full of swearing and cuss words, but if I tell you,
what I like about
stuff, I'm going to tell you something.
Exactly. And you can not only be honest, but, you know, you don't have to – I'm not going to say you don't have to obey the rules, because there's always – you know, you want to be – you want to present what you want to present properly and professionally and all that kind of stuff. And by the way, I think it's really cool that you're passing on skills for people to see on YouTube for free. That's awesome, man. So congratulations for that. But one of the things that I like about the internet, because I'm part of the Hands-On Car Show now from the Eastwood Company, is that there are no rules. You know – it's like this last weekend, I went to Mustang Week in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and I had my little GoPro camera, which, as you know, will fit in the palm of my hand. I had a wire from the camera up to a lapel mic, and I walked the show.
It is a little camera because you've got tiny hands.
Well, I do. So you know it's a tiny camera. So, but I did interviews. I did, you know, a big pan shots of the, you know, and I started putting it together, and I think it's going to be really fun. But, you know, just because it doesn't cost very much money doesn't mean you can't put a good product out there. And to me, that's one of the beautiful things about doing some internet stuff, is that, you know, you're not going to have somebody say, no, you can't air that. Well, you can air whatever the heck you want to air. And, you know, as long as you feel good about it, then there are no rules.
Yeah, and that's what's kind of – I was talking to this one guy that was in the shop there today, one of the companies, and doing some filming with, and, you know, some of the products that we use. And I was like, you know, I want to get camera guys that, you know, we're BMX racers, and we sponsor a factory-level BMX team. And a lot of these BMX kids and me growing up skateboarding too, they take their GoPro or they get a little better camera or whatever, and they'll go to the skate park or the BMX track, and they'll film a bunch of stuff, and they'll edit and put it on the music. And it looks unbelievable because they haven't been to school and college to say, this is the cut and dry, this is the formula that you must follow, be a robot, be a sheep, and do exactly what everybody else has done. And he just kind of looked at me like, holy crap, that's an idea. Yeah, use a bunch of young kids that aren't set in the ways and haven't watched every single TV show on everything that's all the same lighting and the same angles. And, I mean, that's what, like, story I read one time, that's why the Batman TV show in the 60s was so, it brought an audience in because it wasn't the same cut and dry. They used weird camera angles and stuff, even back then, that they tried different stuff. And I think it would be really neat. You know, everybody's always just doing the same thing, but you can try stuff a lot easier and there's less consequences if your 10-minute video on YouTube flops instead of having, you know, a production company of 30 people and it flops and, oh, crap, we didn't bring no money in now and we can't.
$500,000 to shoot,
Yeah.
I watched a commercial one time. It was for a car care product company called Surf City Garage, and they had – it was a contest. They had high school kids, and the high school team that won, each one of them, a team of like four or five kids, they did their spin on Surf City Garage products and how to do it. Well, the team that won, like I said, they're in junior high. And they put together this incredible commercial. It was a 30-second spot, and they used all just mini cameras and stuff like that, cut it together themselves, and did a great job because nobody told them what not to do, you know?
Right, right, yep.
So neat stuff. Well, I know you're big into passing on these skills and you know, like you said, you've been on advisory boards advising for curriculum for students and things like that. And also you judge the new products section at SEMA. In your opinion, because I've got my own opinion about this, those two things are kind of tied in together. But it's to me, there's a huge issue and a huge problem with young people coming into this industry, and it has to do with new products in a sense that, you know, sometimes, you know, there needs to be new ideas. But I don't know. It kind of worries me sometimes that that there's not enough kids interested in the business of what we do. And the truth is, you can make a good living. You don't have to be on TV. You don't have to be in magazines. But you can make a really good living as a technician. So I don't know. I mean, what do we got to do to change the minds of some of these kids and get them into the hobby?
Well, you know, Hollywood plays a part in that. Look, back in the day when Fast and Furious came on, whether you liked that movie or not, look at the influx of not only participants in the tuner world. You know, we've built a lot of OEM cars for all the corporations for SEMA, and one year we did a little tuner Cavalier, and we toured it around to the NOPE shows that was big then. And, man, you know, that was the youth of the market right then, and it was booming because of this Hollywood TV movie show that was kind of cool and a little edgy. And then everybody, you know, you go to a grocery store, and there's a little tuner car that rumbles in, and, you know, and then you go to SEMA, and that one corner was full of the tuner stuff for about 3 years before it kind of fell off a little bit. Yeah, the tuner stuff's still out there, but I see it kind of lightening up a little bit. But, I mean, there's just many ways to bring in stuff. You know, I was lucky that my dad and my uncle were in the cars. That's why I got into it, you know. And that's one thing I say when I announce, you know, when I see a young kid riding with their dad or something in the autocross, you know, if you don't have your own kid, bring somebody else's kid, keep the industry alive. Yeah, we've got the recruiting for the colleges and stuff right now with Wildtech being huge. But actually right now, the parent company that owns Wildtech is having troubles, and the whole Wildtech campus stuff is for sale with threats of being closed, if you didn't know that.
Oh, my. I did not know that. That's concerning.
Yeah, I actually had a contact from somebody that wanted to know if I wanted to be on a panel to try to get a bunch of investors together and try to buy the Wildtech chain off of it. But, I mean, I don't really want to be in a college, you know, owned colleges and stuff, but, you know, like advisory board and help them out with any advice that they could have. But, I mean, the colleges do a lot. I mean, just, it's tough, you know. Maybe going to the grocery store, and I'm going to stand over here, and I'm going to pick up some magazines. You know, there's a skateboard magazine, there's a mountain bike magazine, there's a gun magazine, there's a football. Well, the kid picks up a hot rod magazine that he falls in love with cars. Is when all that goes to online stuff, is that going to hurt the new people coming in? Yeah, I think so. I mean, I try to get kids interested in as much as I can because I was lucky that people got me interested in it. But yeah, I mean, I don't think there's no set formula that, but, you know, TV shows that helps it, you know, to come to somebody, I like the Power Block on Saturday morning, you don't like that cartoon, you flip the channel, you run across there, and now you start watching this automotive car show. You know, that all that helps.
I think it does, and I think it's just gonna. I think it's gonna take people being aware of it, and you know, just you know, one person can help. You announcing at car shows at Good Guys saying, "Hey, bring your nephew if you don't want to bring your son." Or I think it's got to be a grassroots movement from the bottom up. Because I don't know. I don't know about you, but I don't have a whole lot of faith in. I don't know. I'm not even going to go there. I was going to say I don't have a whole lot of faith in government changing the world for the better, but I think it has to come from the people, and maybe we can inspire a couple of people just over the course of our careers and try and help out that way. But
yeah, that's exactly right. Politicians ain't going to do nothing. I always, you know, the old say, I say this more often because my sister's a teacher and a guidance counselor. I said, you know, those that do, and those that can't, they always say teach. You know, I give my sister a hard time about that. Well, if you can't be a teacher or nothing else, you can become a politician.
Okay, well, now that we've pissed all those people off, I'm going to ask you a question about your wife, Carrie's Corvair. Why in the heck would you guys do a custom Corvair? I love those cars. And that's a devil's advocate question. I love those cars. Grew up around a 67 Mons is one of my favorite cars. Why would you guys pick a Corvair?
Well, years ago, we used to build a car ourselves on nights and weekends every fall and winter, debut it in the spring, show it, and sell it in the fall, whether we sold it privately or took it to an auction. That was just something we did besides working the normal 60 to 70 hours a week on customer cars. We did a car for ourselves. Well, when you do a car for yourself, you could, one, pick a different body, something that, you know, maybe somebody's scared to try. Or, you know, a couple of times we had a customer come to us through the years and, oh, let's do this car. And then they realize how much it costs. They dry up. They run away. We fell in love with that idea. We built the car for ourselves.
Right.
Kind of one way we built the Riviera over 10 years ago that did very well in the magazines. And, well, it was time we wanted to build another something, you know, let people know that it's funny the amount of people that think that we closed our shop because we did TV and didn't still have the shop open, so it was like, okay, let's debut a car at SEMA, let people know that we are really building cars still, and let's build something that's not just the normal, maybe a normal 32 Roadster or a 69 Camaro or whatever. Let's build something different. Well, my wife is about a foot shorter than me, so I think she picked a car that she will fit in way more comfortable than me, so it is her car. And then I remember we were going down the road coming back from an event, and she's like, well, what about this car? What about this car? I was like, no. Well, she says, well, what about a Corvair? I was like, you know, I think I can build a Corvair, kind of cool. You know, of course, she admitted just again the other day that she thought just a set of wheels and a paint job and interior and everything else stock. Well, me being the hot rod, cut stuff up and build it from scratch, I envisioned what we built, which is we cut it at the rockers, built everything in between, built a custom frame, put a 9-inch underneath of it, coilovers, you know, right tech stuff, but all coilovers and big brakes, and basically, you know, Mustang 2 narrowed down. You know, basically, it's a street rod with a Corvair skin. You know, we even built the upper cowl, all the inner supports, the wheel tubs. Of course, you know, there was no transmission tunnel because the motor was in the back, so you had to change everything, and so we built this little first-gen Corvair. She picked all the colors and the wheels and did the interior, so that's why it's a light purple. Mm-hmm. It's got brushed nickel trim that our friends from Advanced Plating did, you know, and she got debuted brand-new wheels from Budnick and SEMA that she went through a few styles with them when they were wanting to launch, and picked all the colors, did it all out there helping me, and debuted it. It went over very well at SEMA. We've been hauling around doing quite a few events with it, so yeah, it's just, yeah, I had one guy kind of censored a little bit. He goes, is this your, like, FU to the hot rod world? And SEMA, I was like, well, what do you mean? He goes, dude, you brought a purple Corvair. And I was like, yeah, you don't have to worry about another one being here. And he goes, no, I guess not. And he kind of chuckled and walked away. But, you know, that purple Corvair, it made, you know, Hot Rod Magazine's blog, Auto Week's top cars of the show, Popular Hot Rodding's top cars of the show. You know, we brought a little purple Corvair, and it went over very well, so.
Yeah. Well, I smoked it over up close, and it was in a good spot, tons of traffic, and the thing looked outstanding, man, so a well-done car. How people listening to Shop Talk, and by the way, we're talking with Tim Strange of Strange Motion, how do people find out about, what's your website URL, and how can they find out pictures of some of the builds that you've done?
The website is www.strangemotion.com. Kind of in the middle of building a new site. We've got some of the pictures up there of the Corvair, and we built a new project for Ford last year too, a new Transit Connect wagon minivan thing that we built BMX scene for them. It's on there. And then we seem to update more our Facebook stuff like a lot of people do because it's easy. We actually have a public like page, Strange Motion Rod and Custom, that we do a lot of stuff on there. Put a lot of pictures from the shop up on there, as well as a Strange Motion Rod and Custom with an N in between Rod and Custom and not and. That's our Instagram page. And we also have a Twitter that is, what is that, Rock Builder or something like that. It's linked to our Facebook also. And then there's
I see the tags that you guys post.
Too, that everything gets kind of linked in. And a lot of times on our Strange Motion Rod and Custom Facebook page, the wife will do trivia questions, and winners will get, you know, either a Strange Motion T-shirt or one of our supporting companies will throw in a hat or a T-shirt or whatever, and we'll send out, she'll do little prizes and stuff from time to time. So it's really, really crazy, the power of social media. You know, I never really wanted to do social media until a couple of our supporters and sponsors said, hey, you need to have a Twitter, you need to have Instagram or whatever. And it's crazy the amount of people that, even high-up companies that you're just friends with on Facebook or something, you'll see them at an event and they'll mention something that they seen on your Facebook, even though they didn't comment or say anything. It's like, wow, people really do pay attention with this. With our, you know, our Facebook and our Instagram and our all that stuff, we've got over, you know, over 20,000 followers, and it's, you know, that goes out to a lot of people.
Yep, and then other people share that and stuff, and it's cool. And you guys also have the Strange Motion Way on the YouTube channel, so there's tons of ways to see what you're doing. But I wanted to let people know that are listening that Tim and Carrie have great T-shirts. They design their own T-shirts. They're always cool. The Strange Motion logo itself is awesome. So if you don't like cars, you want a cool looking T-shirt, go to strangemotion.com and check out the apparel and hats. And even though you stretch out the bill all flat and you use an iron on it and stuff, and you know, you don't curve the bill at all. I want to point people towards your merchandise because it's always cool looking stuff.
Yeah, thanks. And there's also a merchandise section on our Facebook page also.
Cool deal. Well, Tim, I want to thank you.
One cool thing about the TV, you know, not everybody can afford, after seeing you on TV, can afford a hot rod, but they can afford a T-shirt from their favorite builder or whatever. So that, you know, merchandise is a cool thing to be a part of. So, you know, I know I've got T-shirts from some of my buddies' companies or my friend's shop that I like their work, and I'll rock their shirt too. So, you know, merchandise is a cool thing to be a part of the cool kids.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and it's fun stuff. And you know, like I said, you guys design cool-looking stuff, so even if you're not a gearhead, well, what the heck. But
Most of our shirts are designed by Brian Stufsky at Problem Child Customs, but we have an input on everything that he does. So.
Right. Well, speaking of shout-outs, is there anybody else you want to give a shout-out to? Any sponsors that you want to thank or people that have been mentors to you that you want to give a mention to?
Oh, man, I got a long list. You know, we've got a lot of good support, you know, with the shop, from Industrial Depot to Exalta Paint to, you know, Loctite to Red Cap to Dura Manufacturing. I mean, we've got a lot of good companies. You know, Kicker Car Audio has been a part of our shop forever, and they're also a big supporter of our BMX race team. You know, same with Royal Purple helps out on both fronts. And, you know, Summit Racing helps us. And, you know, we got a lot of companies. You know, same ones that's helped you, from, you know, Advanced Plating and Homemaster Mufflers and stuff. You know, we've had a lot of good companies that's been with us for almost the full 20 years, and, you know, at least 10 or 5. So we kind of stick with companies and do what we always say we're going to do. And that's one thing. I don't know how much time we got here. There's, you know, one of the Facebook pages, people, you know, young kids come in. Well, how do I get free stuff? You know, how do I do this? And how do I do, I've been working at this shop, and how do I get some free equipment? And I put this big post on there, and, you know, some of them thought I was an idiot or cocky or whatever, and I just kind of told them, and it's like, you know, the free stuff, you have to work a long time to get sponsors and marketing partners and all that stuff. And it's not just give me free stuff and then you go on your way. I say you look at it as a professional sports athlete. You know, if they might tease you or tickle you a little bit with your shop, and they might give you a big discount on something, whether it's parts or somebody might give you a tool for your shop. Well, if you don't have the social media to plug in, you don't go to the events with the signboards, and you don't do the YouTube videos, guess what? That company didn't get the value out of that sponsorship with you, and they're probably not going to help you again. You know, same thing. If you get signed up on professional basketball team, and you can't score, and you can't do this, or you foul out, you're going to be benched, and the next season you're probably cut. It's the same way in this automotive industry. If you don't, hey, if you get a bunch of parts and you get sponsors and stuff, and you say, hey, that car is going to be at SEMA in 2014, and it don't make it, you're either not going to get anything from them again, or you might even actually give those parts back or have to pay for them. And right. Again, this company, this industry is small enough that a lot of these people know each other and go to dinner and, hey, you don't want them saying, hey, I worked with this guy and he didn't do what he was going to do. I don't recommend you doing business with that guy. You know, I hear that, you know, companies will call me, hey, this guy worked with you on a show and he name dropped you and he wants free stuff or he wants a dealer discount or whatever, you know. So you kind of got to do your homework with if you're a parts guy and somebody hits you up for stuff. And if you ever get help, you better do what you say you're going to or you're not going to get help ever again. You know, I guess I'm lucky I've been part of this industry for 21 years full-time for a living, and I've always done what I said I'm going to do.
Well, and you got to prove yourself to these companies. And I always say that there's nothing – free stuff is not free because, like you said, there's a responsibility to honor that company, to have – I call it an equitable trade to where if they're going to give you free parts, you give them either the magazine article that you promised or visibility with the vehicle somehow, some way, or endorse their product somehow. And that's a lot of work. You know it's a lot of work, and I know it's a lot of work. I've been doing it in television for 13 years now, and it's something that I don't take lightly. I don't stand there with my hand out thinking I could get free stuff. I know there's a responsibility attached to that. So it's an interesting mindset where people think that we just sit there, you know, the truck backs up and dumps out a bunch of free stuff, and we just sit there and smile and wring our hands over. That ain't how it works.
Yeah, one of the first cars that I had a lot of company supports on, we built like 12 years ago. Well, yeah, I got a lot of super deep discounts and a lot of donated parts to promote. You know, not only a lot of these people will send me their R&D stuff to test and tune and give them, hey, you need to change this or something like that too. But that year that I did that car, we had to be at so many events. We were at 32 events that year. So if you look back at it, it probably would have been cheaper just to pay full list price for everything that was on that car for all the travel that I had to do and everything. And, you know, and you better make sure you're promoting the logos right and the company's right and their parts right.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a show the other day on TV, Back to the Automotive, and I'm a friend of this guy on Facebook, and he posted, hey, this company just gave us a whole bunch of stuff for our new season. Flipped on the show, one of his new season shows, he's talking bad about the product.
Oh, no.
It's such and such isn't working as good as what I thought it would need. I need this other guy to come in with this. And I was like, guess what? You just shot yourself in the foot, dude.
Yeah.
You want to, you know, I know a story. I won't mention names or what show, but there was, you know, the company sign up. Here's our advertising money. This is what you say about our companies. If you say it wrong, it doesn't count. If one of their companies doesn't have an S on it and you say a plural, that doesn't count as being plugged. And it all works out like that. You got to do what you say you're going to do. You got to be a little smart. You know, people laugh at the NASCAR racers when they rattle off all their sponsors or their NHRA guys. Those are people that are putting them there and paying their paychecks.
It's a contract.
Yep.
That's part of it. Well, listen, man, thanks for taking time. Again, those of you people that are listening, you don't know, we had a software glitch here, and Tim and I had a great discussion, about 2 weeks ago, and we got lost. But Tim's a great guy, and he's always willing to help, and you know, we did this interview again. And I want to thank you, Tim, very much for the work that you did on my little Mustang on Jaded. You came over to the shop a couple of times and kind of talked me off the ledge a couple of times as well, and just gave of yourself, and you didn't ask for anything in return, and it meant a lot to me. I had a lot of people stepping up and helping me when I was in a pinch for time on that car, and you showed me what you're made of, man, and I just want to say thanks out loud.
Yeah, it was cool and helping you, and, you know, I knew you. You were the one that first invited me down to be a part of your show, and that spun into mine, so I guess I thank you for that. Some days I want to kick you in the shins for that, but, yeah, thanks for that mostly. But, you know, it's cool that some of the people on some of these shows aren't really car people. They just play them on TV. So when I got there, it was pretty cool that I'd seen what you were doing off camera and, you know, just to come over and help you try to meet that deadline, even just a little bit. It was, you know, turned out pretty cool and pretty awesome project. And even though that it should have its own GPS to find its way around the autocross course would probably be a good addition to it. But, yeah, it's a bitchin' hot rod with a lot of horsepower. Now you're out having some fun with it. So.
Yeah, cool deal. Well, people, we're listening and talking with Tim Strange, Strange Motion. Check him out at www.strangemotion.com. Look him up on Facebook. They always got some wacky stuff going on. And on Facebook, they're heavily involved with the BMX hobby. So, you know, all kinds of cool stuff. So, yeah, never a dull moment with the Strange Motion crew. So, thanks, Tim. We appreciate your time, buddy.
Okay, thanks a lot, man.
Okay, and you're listening to Shop Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Tates. And as always, we're brought to you by Eastwood. Do the job right with Eastwood. We'll see you down the road.